States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Margaret Bartley presiding. All who have business before this court, draw near, and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good morning. I'm Judge Bartley. On my right is Judge Toth, and on my left is Judge Falvey. We're here today in the matter of Hal H. Williams v. Wilkie, which is docket number 16-3988. The issue before the court is, among other things, whether when the board has remanded a case to the Agency of Original Jurisdiction, 38 CFR 20.1304A and Kucharuski v. West apply when the case afterwards returns to the board. Would counsel for the parties please state your name and your appearances for the record, beginning with appellant's counsel.
Good morning. I am appellant's counsel Megan Gentile for Hal Williams. To my side is Second Chair Harold Hoffman.
Great. Thank you. And Secretary?
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Josephine Nicole Cottle from the Secretary of Veterans Affairs.
Thank you. Are the parties ready to proceed? Okay. Each party will have 30 minutes to present their arguments. Did you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal, Ms. Gentile?
Yes, Your Honor, 7 minutes.
7 minutes. Okay, you may proceed, Ms. Gentile.
Good morning. May it please the court. Before we discuss our arguments in this appeal, I'd like to give a very brief history of Rule 1304's creation and how we got here today. Rule 1304 was formerly Rule 19.174. It was promulgated in 1990 to provide a definitive period for appellants to submit additional evidence or argument, request a hearing, or change or obtain counsel. For brevity's sake, I'm going to call those the 90-day rights throughout this. When that rule was proposed, that time period was actually initially 60 days, but during promulgation, the Secretary stated that 90 days was a more reasonable period because it enabled appellants and their representatives to easily determine the exact cutoff date to exercise those rights. It also enabled the board to provide hearings when they were requested and base its decisions on all relevant evidence. Now, in addition to expanding the 60 days to 90 during promulgation, VA added the phrase, or until the date the appellant's decision is promulgated by the Board of Veterans' Appeals, whichever comes first. This phrase was never part of the proposed language and wasn't born from any notice or comment. Interestingly, though, that meant that the final rule made the proposed rule both longer and shorter, and it also eliminated a definitive cutoff date that you can calculate from your notice. Since then, VA has referenced Rule 20.1304 in its notice letters to appellants when the case is certified to the board. At one time, VA's 90-day letter stated, if you elect to submit any additional argument or evidence, it must be submitted within 90 days of the date of this letter, see generally Rule 20.1304. If we have not heard from you by the end of the 90-day period, we will assume you have nothing else to submit and we will proceed with a review of your case. Sometime around 2013, VA decided that some appellants would not be afforded a full 90 days. The new 90-day letter, which is the one Mr. Williams received, the one we are talking about in this case, reads, please note that you have 90 days from the date of this letter or until the board issues a decision on your appeal, whichever comes first, to exercise your 90-day rights. So we've been arguing for 5 years that this new letter and Rule 1304A are unlawful, and in response to our arguments, VA's defenses have changed a bit over the years, but they're contradicted by its own actions. So VA has argued that 1304A does not apply here, and because it only applies when an appeal is initially certified to the board. Well, there's no language in Rule 1304A talking about how an appeal is initially certified or how it applies only the first time an appeal reaches the board. 1304A doesn't state that. It says following notification of certification and transfer of records. And VA's July 2016 90-day letter to Mr. Williams specifically references Rule 1304 and cites directly from it. Moreover, Carter v. McDonald in the Federal Circuit stated that Rule 1304A never limits itself to appeals coming to the board for the first time. Relatedly, VA has also argued that this case wasn't certified in 2016. We agree in some extent because this case was certified in January 2013 and remained certified throughout the appeals process. This case proceeded from the board in 2013. There was a board decision in October 2014 after it was certified in 2013, went back down to the RO, and then came back up to the board, which is the board decision that we're appealing today.
Well, wait, just to stop you there. You're basically saying that 20.1304A doesn't really have any, like, temporal context, that once certification happens, then that's enough, and that the period to request, you know, a change in representation, et cetera, offer new evidence and argument, would always, any time after that initial certification, that any time the case is sent back to the board, they would always have the 90 days. That's what you're arguing.
Yes, Your Honor.
But isn't there a temporal certification in, temporal context, rather, in 20.1304?
No, Your Honor. Excuse me.
Well, yeah, I'm just looking. It talks about 90 days after mailing notice of certification. So request for change, we'll just say a request for submission of additional evidence within, okay, this is the title of A. Request for change in rep, personnel hearing, submission of additional evidence within 90 days following notification of certification and transfer of records. So doesn't that kind of place it in the context of the notification of certification? And
it is the event of certification, Your Honor, that we argue triggers the 1304A notification requirements, but there's no period of time when certification ceases to exist. So at all times when a case is about to reach the board, Rule 1304A is triggered, because at all times that case has been certified.
Yeah, but then the reg says, an appellant and his or her rep, if any, will be granted a period of 90 days following the mailing of notice to them that an appeal has been certified. So that, to me, that places it in, or at least it seems to be placing it in a temporal context of there's a 90-day period, or less, we'll get to that later, following notice of certification. So it's placing it in that time frame.
Well, there is a start date, Your Honor, which would be the time that the appellant is notified of certification. That certification, we argue, does occur only once, although actually in this case, Mr. Williams received two certification letters, one in 2013 and one again in 2016. That, we argue, was a redundant letter that Mr. Williams received, even though that appeal remained in the state of certification. He was entitled to 90 days notice. That second notification letter as to certification was not necessary in order to trigger the Rule 13.
Because the reg, you think the reg covers it?
Yes, Your Honor, because it was already certified.
So wouldn't the 90-day period have already have run from the earlier certification letter, the one you think is operative?
The 2013 certification letter, Your Honor? Yes, that was the first 90-day period, and Mr. Williams was afforded his 90 days during that time.
What triggers the second 90-day period, then?
The second 90-day period is triggered, Your Honor, when Mr. Williams was notified that the board was essentially ready to hear his case, and he received that second notification letter in January, I believe it was, 2016.
But you said that he really didn't need to receive that under the reg. You had just said that. So what would trigger the second 90-day period, assuming that, in your view, they didn't even need to send it because it's already covered by 20.1304? What would trigger The 90-day period.
The record being transferred to the board, Your Honor. Mr. Williams was supposed to be notified of that, and he was notified that his record had been transferred to the board, essentially that he was out of the SSOC process and that the board was preparing to hear his case. His records had been transferred, and he was notified of that. But certification, in any case, remained in process because the case, all of the requirements of certification had been met ever since 2013. And you can see that from the VA Form 8 that was prepared back then. All of the requirements for certification, including, you know, the previous notification letters, the previous SSOC response times and whatnot, they had been satisfied. And they never stopped being satisfied in order to trigger Rule 1304A. But even if we're wrong about this, Mr. Williams did receive two notification letters. Even if he wasn't supposed to receive a 2016 letter stating that his case had been certified, because that was redundant information, he was told in 2016 that his case was certified and that he had 90 days to exercise his 90-day rights, and that period was cut off 42 days later.
Or he was told he has 90 days or until the board acts.
Pardon me. Yes, Your Honor. Until the board acts, whichever comes sooner. Yes, that was the wording, and it referenced Rule 20.1304 generally. Now, that does bring us to why we've argued that Rule 20.1304A and the board's action, VA's actions under it, are arbitrary and capricious and contrary to law. They're arbitrary because VA hasn't provided any kind of reasonable justification for cutting that 90-day period short. Originally, VA actually expanded its proposed 60-day period into 90 days to give a definitive cutoff date for an applicant to exercise those 90-day rights, and it gave no justification for cutting that time short. There may be some kind of an efficiency argument there, but efficiency doesn't mean speed at all costs. Another one of the reasons why that 60 days was expanded to 90 was to give the board, make sure the board was provided with all of the evidence necessary any representatives to be present before the board actually made a decision. And it's capricious because it puts the veteran at the board's whim as to when it will make a decision. Essentially, Mr. Williams was mailed a ticking time bomb in 2016. He was told basically nothing. He didn't have 90 days to do anything. He might have had one day to do something. We've had clients who've actually received board denials before their 90-day letter even reached them in the mail. Now, VA used to allow a full 90 days under 1304. That's why this is also capricious, because VA didn't always treat this rule the same way. VA didn't always act the same way under Rule 1304. It used to guarantee some appellants a full 90 days and inform them that the board will not act until 90 days have expired, and then other appellants were not afforded that. We don't know the reason for that change, but actually for a certain period of time in 2013, some appellants received the old version of a letter guaranteeing 90 days, and some appellants, like Mr. Williams, received a letter guaranteeing absolutely nothing. Now, it's contrary to law, and we'll get into Kucharewski and the Fifth Amendment now, if the court is prepared to shift to that subject. Kucharewski applied when an appeal went from the court back down to the board. And Kucharewski's language says when the court remands an appeal back down to the board, an appellant should be afforded 90 days as of right. Kucharewski's rationale, however, applies in this case where an appeal was brought from the board back down to the RO and back up to the board. And the reason is that no matter how an appeal reaches the board, that appeal is still in the non-adversarial proclaimant process throughout the whole time, and the board is supposed to review de novo. If Kucharewski is only supposed to apply when a case is brought from the court back down to the board via remand, that would mean that some appellants who were at the court and had their appeal remanded back down to the board have a better and more protected 90-day right than other appellants. Even though they're all in front of the board, they're all in the same proclaimant non-adversarial process. So why should Kucharewski's rationale only apply to a certain subset of appellants whose case was at the court and remanded back down to the board when all appellants are in front of the board at the same time and are supposed to experience the same de novo standard of review and they're supposed to be participating in the same non-adversarial proclaimant process?
Well, how was Mr. Williams prejudiced by the application of the exact terms of 20.1304 here? I mean, they said 90 days or until we make a decision, and that's what they did.
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Williams was prejudiced because he was not afforded time to present his argument, additional evidence, or obtain representation in order to demonstrate to the board that he was entitled to an earlier effective date for his left knee disability. Now, we actually went through Mr. Williams' case to make sure that there was not just theoretical but actual prejudice, and there was. In 2004, Mr. Williams' rating decision denying his claim was mailed to the incorrect address. There is a returned mail in his record, and then after that, it was never sent to him. In 2009, Mr. Williams went to the VA, talked to his VSO, actually received that 2004 denial, fired his VSO, got a new VSO, and submitted a statement in support of claim that day. That was the first time he found out that his case had even been denied. So he was never, that was a 5104 violation. He was never actually notified of his decision. VA
and
never.
Did he make that argument when this case was sent back down to the board, sent back down by the board to the AOJ? Did he make that argument in front of the AOJ?
Mr. Williams did obtain a new VSO and did submit additional statements. They were much more vague than that, but he did allege that he didn't know until 2009 about his rating decision.
But not mentioning the 2004. So he submitted some argument whenever the case was sent to the AOJ?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Williams did submit additional arguments and evidence, but they were not as clear as they could have been had he, for example, had the opportunity within the 90 days to obtain counsel or other representation who could have made that more clear.
He had a 30-day time period to respond to the SSOC. So, you know, he made an argument down below. The AOJ didn't buy it. They issued a supplementary statement of the case. They gave him 30 days to respond, or he had, via regulation, 30 days to respond. Did he respond with any further info there?
Mr. Williams' representative responded with a very vague statement that reads, I rest the appeal on the answer to the statement of the case and the hearing on appeal, and I have no further argument. I wish to make the following argument to supplement the answer to the statement of the case and other argument of record, issue, and that's the bottom of the page. It looks like there should be another page there, but I can't tell. But at any rate, that triggered a certification that you can see from the internal memos that there's a rating, I think it was a deferred rating decision stating this decision is ready for certification to the board, a new VA Form 8 was prepared, and a new certification letter went out, and the process began anew.
And so he got the certification letter, the 90-day letter. Was he going to submit anything? Had he actually received the 90 days? Was he actually going to submit something?
Yes, Your Honor, but first I did want to clarify. He received a letter notifying him of certification and then a few weeks later received the 90-day letter. They were two separate letters. But yes, during that period of time, Mr. Williams had only spent 42 days, but he had another 48 days and would have exercised that time. He was pretty vocal.
But why did he think he had another 48 days if it said 90 days or until we make a decision?
Well, that is why the 90-day letter is so confusing. 90 days can't mean anything if it can be cut short at any time. Why not make it one day? There's no meaning to that time period, 90 days, if the board can act to truncate it at any time. He wasn't actually given notice of anything, even though it appears to look like he's been given some kind of notice right to act to actually build his case before the board, before it reaches the board.
Well, I mean, so you're saying he actually, even though the letter said that he had 90 days or until the board made a decision, he thought that he had 90 days, or he thought that he didn't really know what he thought
that, Your Honor, that 90 days meant something. He had an expectation of a finite period of time. Otherwise, there can be no meaning to the phrase 90 days in that letter. So what he was deprived of was his expectation that he had some definitive period of time from the date of that letter to act, to essentially build his case before it reached the board, before the board denied it.
But even if that is problematic, the sort of 90 days or until we decide, for prejudice, we'd have to decept that there was something that the veteran would have submitted, right? Because, I mean, at a minimum, that would notify, if you got something, submit it quickly, because this period may end tomorrow.
Yes, Your Honor. There was something that the veteran would have submitted, and there is a strong argument for an earlier effective date. It's our practice at VetLag that we represent our clients on remand for free. We submit post-remand briefs for every client whose case is remanded back from the court to the board. And when we receive that 90-day letter, that is our cue to begin preparing that brief. A lot of times that means getting additional medical evidence, getting additional statements, buddy statements, sometimes statements from the veteran or a surviving spouse or whatever that happens to be. And that does take time. We have to act like the 90-day letter, when we're practicing, we have to act like the 90-day letter means something, not just that it's already too late to submit additional evidence because maybe the board made a decision that same day the 90-day letter went out. This has to mean something, and if it can be cut short this easily, it can't mean anything. And VA used to think it meant something because VA used to actually inform appellants that they had a full definitive 90 days from the date of that letter, and the board wouldn't act until that 90 days had expired, until those rights had been either exercised or until the time period to exercise those rights without showing good cause had passed. So there's the prejudice. Mr. Williams does have an argument for earlier effective date. He had an expectation of 90 days to submit it. It's typical practice to submit or to expect that 90 days. Otherwise, that letter can't have any meaning. And he was deprived of that by 48 days.
After the board made its decision under 1304B, If 1304 applies, 1304A merely says during that 90-day period or until the board decides, you can, without cause, do one of three things. However, after that period, you may do the same three things with cause. What, if anything, did Mr. Williams do to take advantage of that provision to after the board decided to say, hold on, I have something, and I have cause, and so I'd like to exercise the same options I had previously.
2020-100 wouldn't allow for that because of the appeals process that would happen after a final board decision. If Mr. Williams were to submit additional evidence after the board denied his claim and show good cause, that would be sent back down to the AOJ because the case would no longer be in front of the board. Potentially, it would be considered some kind of an implied request for reconsideration. But what the board would have done was sent that back down to the AOJ. The board wouldn't have considered it anymore because both 1304A and 1304B would have been truncated by the board's denial, the board's decision.
1304C says you receive the new evidence, you send it back to the AOJ unless they waive it. Right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So don't they all just work together?
Well, 1304C also says that if the board acts early during that notice period, of course, that's referring to a different period of time, but it also says that the only board action that should truncate that period is a full grant of benefits. So, if that had happened, Mr. Williams wouldn't be submitting anything. We wouldn't be appealing that board decision. But that actually is one of the principles that we look to when we were trying to glean the meaning of 1304A until the board makes a decision, whichever comes sooner. Well, in 1304C, the only board decision that is allowed to be made during that period of time would be a full grant of benefits. So we have also argued that this is a due process violation because veterans' benefits, as Cushman instructs us, are constitutionally protected property interests, which require meaningful notice and meaningful opportunity to be heard. Mr. Williams was not provided with meaningful notice or meaningful opportunity to be heard when he received a letter telling him that the board can cut off his notice period at any time. The board can act to deny his claim at any time. That's not any kind of meaningful notice. And when, of course, the board did actually act before his 90-day period had expired.
Don, please have 2 minutes. It's just given like, there's a lot of opportunities that he has had to make this argument. They sent the case back down to the AOJ, so before an SSSC was even issued, he had time to submit evidence, argument, et cetera. And then after the SSSC, he has time. What's the benefit of giving more time once the case returns to the board?
Mr. Williams made a rational decision when he decided to stop submitting evidence for additional SSOCs to get out of essentially the pre-board adjudication hamster wheel. If he had submitted additional evidence, he would have gotten another SSOC. It would have been another 30-day period, and who knows how long it would have actually been between SSOCs. And those tend to be very redundant documents anyway. He wanted a de novo review. He wanted fresh eyes on his arguments. Now, he received a de novo review, but that was not a de novo review of any new arguments he would have submitted. But it's a rational decision to say, you know what, I'm done with this SSOC process. I want fresh eyes on it. Let's go to the board. And that's essentially what Mr. Williams' representative did back in 2016. I think it was June 2016 when that notification came up to VA.
Well, has he really been prejudiced, though, if... he did make an argument about not having received an earlier decision down below. Aside from making the constitutional but also kind of procedural, regulation is invalid kind of argument that you're making here, you could. Kind of extrapolate on his argument that he didn't receive an earlier notice of an earlier decision, couldn't you?
I'm not sure I understand your question. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I mean, you're basically just challenging the fact that you're saying that the regulation is unconstitutional, challenging the way the process occurred here, but has he been prejudiced? Because he could just basically repeat and elaborate on the argument that he made down at the AOJ level. And you haven't really done any of that, like explained why the effective date is incorrect. You haven't really elaborated on that at all.
The effective date is incorrect because Mr. Williams was not informed of his denial.
Well, that's what I'm saying, but you're not really arguing that here at all. You're just taking issue with the process.
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Williams was...
But if you can argue what he was arguing and that the SSOC apparently addressed, how has he been prejudiced if he's actually able to make that argument here because he planted the seeds of it down there whenever the case was remanded?
Yes, Your Honor. He did plant the seeds, but he didn't get to expand that argument in front of the court for de novo review at that time. Mr. Williams also could have, during that time, obtained or changed representatives who could have fleshed out that argument in a much more clear way, and that was not an option. And we've been hired at some times during the period of the 90 days with only a few weeks to go, and we have to get going. There's often in those times we will notify the board that we've been hired and we request additional time we'll make that request. But in this case, that didn't even happen because Mr. Williams still had all of this time or still had an expectation of all of this time, but he was deprived of that with an early board decision. And even with good cause, he couldn't have come back to the board with that evidence without first having to. Maybe it would be considered a motion for reconsideration, but more likely it would just get sent back down to AOJ and continue getting...
Okay, and so far you've talked about the effective date issue and how it was treated down below. The Q issue, was he going to submit additional argument regarding that issue?
I don't know if Mr. Williams was going to as far as the Q issue went, but we did also, to flush out a prejudice, whether there was prejudice here, we did actually find clear and unmistakable error in the 1970 rating decision as well. That actually misread a medical examination and a medical report stating that he had a derangement in both knees, not just one knee, and that also he had there were some flexion issues in both knees, and not just one knee, and he had an injury in service of both knees. And the 1970 rating decision stated no injury to the left knee, when I don't know if that meant no event in service or no present condition, but it either rate the medical records that the 1970 rating decision relied upon actually misquoted those. They didn't see the word both or maybe the letter S or something like that, but that was just a clear and unmistakable error of fact that would have changed the outcome of that rating decision at the time.
You know, I just want to ask one thing. In terms of what you're asking for your sort of, I guess we'll call it your facial challenge to the reg, is it to strike just the sort of disjunctive language, the or until the date? Is it to strike just that or to strike down the reg in whole?
Just that one part, Your Honor. That's the only part that is problematic in our eyes, because the 90-day period is wonderful. And actually, in truth, if it's written more like 1304C that says that period can only be truncated by a full grant of benefits, we'd obviously have no objection to that either. But it is that phrase, the word or and everything after that, the whichever comes sooner phrase that we object to.
Okay, your time is up. Thank you, Ms. Gentile.
Thank you.
Mr. Joseph, you may proceed. And we added 5 minutes of time onto appellant's time, so if you need that, we'll add it on.
Oh, thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. 38 CFR Section 19.38 governs cases that return to the Board following a Board remand and the issuance of a supplemental statement of the case. Secretary, in that scenario here, the Board was free to issue its decision on August 26, 2016. The Secretary recognized that the Board referenced what the C generally cite to Section 20.1304 in its July 15, 2016 letter to appellant. If the Court finds that Section 20.1304 applies in this case, the result is the same. The Board was still free to issue its decision on August 26, 2016. In any event, appellant fails to show prejudice. So there are three ways that a claimant's case reaches the Board. The first is the original appeal. This is where an appellant files a notice of disagreement to a rating decision. The regional office provides appellant a statement of the case, and appellant then files a substantive appeal. After that substantive appeal, the record is certified and transferred to the Board. And that's in that scenario, Section 19.36 and Section 20.1304 apply. The second way a case reaches the Board is on return to the Board following a prior Board remand and the SSOC 30-day notice period. And that's it. In that scenario, as in here, Section 19.38 governs. The case is returned to the Board for further appellate processing.
Can I just stop you there? I noticed you said that in your brief, too, that 19.38 is it?
Yes.
Applies.
Yes,
so, but 1938 really doesn't explain what happens when the case leaves the AOJ and has come back up. Like, what would happen, or what should we, let's assume that 38 applies and 1304 does not apply. What happens if an appellant does want to add new evidence or change representation once the 30-day period to respond to the SSOC has expired? Like, what? It's almost like there's an absence of guidance on how you do that under your view, right? Because 19.38 doesn't really say anything about that. It just says, we'll wait 30 days, and then it goes back up to the Board. But it doesn't say what should happen if the appellant, the appellant claimant, whoever, needs to do something, like submit new evidence or even change a rep or something like that.
Appellant in this case was free to submit evidence and argument until the day the Board issued its decision on August 26th.
So that's your view of how it would work, is 19.38 kicks in, you get the 30 days after the SSOC, and then it's returned to the Board, and then the board just, it's kind of like amorphous. The board will make its decision whenever, and if the appellant needs to contact the board about one of these issues, representation, evidence, argument, they're just kind of flying blind about how much time they have.
And, Your Honor, the board did send appellant that July 15th letter, which stated he had 90 days or until the board issued a decision, whichever came first, to submit that evidence and argument, but that the board would be free to issue its decision, that term returned to the board for further appellate processing. The board is free to issue its decision at that time. And in this case, there is no indication that appellant had any additional evidence or argument to submit in his SSOC response.
No, I mean, I get that. I'm just talking generally about, forget Mr. Williams, like, how is it contemplated that the process will work? So you admitted, I thought, in your brief, and you may have said just a minute ago, but I wasn't tracking everything you said, that letter was sent in error. They didn't need to send that letter.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so what we have is 19.38.
Yes.
And that basically says return it to the board, and then if the veteran needs to make changes, add argument, whatever, then they just have a unformed period of time. They should just do it as soon as
they can. Yes.
Okay.
And that is the regulation that applies in this scenario, and that is different from on the remand from this court, where this court's cases in Kucharowski versus West and Clark versus O'Rourke apply. And in that scenario, an appellant is guaranteed 90 days absent clear waiver to submit evidence or argument to the board. So 19.38 governs actions, as you noted, as Your Honor has noted, when a remanded from the board is received. And this is distinct from the language used in Section 19.36 and Section 20.1304, which provides that following certification and transfer. And in this situation, the regulation provides that it is following the 30-day SSOC response period in Section 20.302. So it is as a sequence of events. Section 19.35 follows a substantive appeal. In this court, in Evans versus Shinseki, has stated that a substantive appeal happens only once. And following that certification and the transfer, that is when Section 20.1304 applies. So the July 15th letter does not guarantee to appellant 90 days. This letter informs him that his case has returned to the board, not that his case has been certified and transferred, and that since his appeal was previously remanded, the board would handle his appeal expeditiously, and that is with speed and efficiency. And in this case, on record at page 80, the board informed appellant that his case had been advanced on the docket due to his advanced age under Section 20.900. So that is why his case was decided so quickly, because under Section 20.900, cases are decided in docket order. So in theory, if he receives docket number 10 and cases 1 through 9 have been adjudicated, his case would be the next on the docket.
Now, do you know whether the board is sending the 90-day letter to everyone whose case was remanded back to the AOJ? Are they automatically doing that now? Even though I understand that your view of the regs is like that doesn't even apply to 1304, but they did it in this case. Just, you know. Is that what they're just doing for everyone, kind of unwittingly? You know, they shouldn't be, but they are. Is that your view of this?
To my knowledge, yes, the board is still sending letters, the same type of letter as in this case. Yes, Your Honor.
For all of these? Okay.
For cases in this procedural
right.
posture,
uh-huh.
yes.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So, VA...
Why would they do that? If it doesn't apply, why?
That would appear to be an administrative error. Your Honor.
The administrative error to include this 90-day period, cite to the regulation, why would they continue to do it at tomorrow or the day before today if it's error?
Yeah, the Secretary has requested that the Board no longer send the letter. And continuing, this letter also says we will make every effort to decide your appeal as quickly as possible. And if there are a number of factors that could decide his case, depending on its complexity, and it basically says we don't know how long it will take. It could take 2 days, it could take 200, but we will get you a decision as quickly as possible. And the plain language of this letter does not guarantee an appellant 90 days. So this case really is about due process, and the hallmark of due process is the notice and opportunity to respond in a meaningful time, in a meaningful manner. And appellant has informed VA 4 times since his case was remanded in October of 2014 that he was free to submit evidence and argument to the board, and he was free to do so until August 26, 2016. And first time was in the remand order itself of the October 27, 2014 remand, where they informed the appellant, you are free to submit additional evidence and argument. And next, in the supplemental statement of the case, the SSOC stated that if appellant had no other information to submit, the board will consider what you have already submitted in deciding your appeal. And appellant responded on January 19, 2016, and that's record at 23, affirmatively stating that he had no other information or evidence to submit. And again, on June 20th, the regional office asked the appellant's representative if he had anything to submit. And appellant's representative at the agency level stated, I rest the appeal on the statement of the case and the hearing on appeal if conducted, and I have no further argument. And that is at record at 21. And there were two separate options there saying, I have further evidence or I have no further, oh, sorry, I have no further argument or I have further argument. And he selected, he placed two check marks next to the option that says, I have no further argument to submit.
So do you know how long the board has actually been sending the 90-day letters to cases that were remanded to the AOJ upon receiving them back up?
Your Honor, I do not have that information. But I know I can tell you that the board is still currently sending them. Yeah. This decision on August 26th was not arbitrary and capricious, as appellant asserts, because when, as noted before, when cases return to the board, they are decided in docket order, and that is provided in Section 20.900. And moving to Kucharowski and Clark, the 90-day period announced in that case does not apply in this scenario. Simply, it applies on the way down from the court to the board and does not apply on the way up. And in Kucharowski, the court created what described as the functional equivalent of the 90-day period in Section 20.1304. They did not, the court did not state in that case that Section 20.1304 applies, and they explicitly held that it applies to that procedural posture when the case is remanded from the court to the board. And the court in Kucharowski explained why. The court stated that is consistent with the transition from the closed record adversarial proceedings at this court back to the open record non-adversarial proceedings before the board. In this procedural posture, in our case, in the case here, appellant's case has never left the agency. He has remained free to submit evidence and argument throughout his appeal. There was no period in time where he could not submit evidence. And assuming if the court should find that Section 20.1304, the court should reject appellant's challenge to Section 20.1304 as arbitrary and capricious. The court found in Disabled American Veterans versus the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, and this is the 2003 case before the Federal Circuit, the appellant had brought a petition for a challenge to the rules to several regulations, including Section 20.1304A. And the court noted the language of Section 20.1304A states that an appellant may submit additional evidence to the board for a limited period, which begins when an appeal has been certified to the board for appellate review and ends 90 days thereafter, or when the board issues its decision, whichever comes first. And after acknowledging that provision, the Federal Circuit held, in short, we find Section 20.1304 to be valid.
Yeah, but it seemed to be mostly addressing the challenge to that, to 20.1304 seemed to be to whether the time limits conflicted with 5103, with the 1 year notice requirement. So it didn't really seem to. I mean, I understand they like said, like, yeah, the reg's okay, but really they only addressed the issue that the petitioners there raised, and that was the timeliness. It didn't address the part of the regulation, of, you know, the either 90 days or when we make a decision part.
And, however, they, respectfully, Your Honor, the court did discuss the language of Section 20.1304, and after acknowledging that section, did find the regulation to be valid. And continuing to the...
Yes, sir. I'll have to apologize for not knowing this, but if the 90-day period doesn't apply in this, if 1304 doesn't apply in these circumstances, and the appellant has the right up to the point of decision to submit additional evidence and argument, open record, all that, is the appellant told that repeatedly, or is it just understood? Because instead, he's got a letter that says you got 90 days or until the board decides, and you're saying that doesn't apply. So, but they know they've got up to the decision.
And he has our VA has informed him four times prior to this letter that he remained free to submit evidence and argument.
Well, you've got 30 days to respond to the SOC. So there's lots of deadlines being thrown at the appellant. But they have a notice that says you've got forever to submit this until the board decides.
And should the court find that Section 20.1304 applies, again, the result would be the same in this case, because the board was free to issue its decision within that period of time.
Well, no, I was assuming for my question that 1304 doesn't apply.
That's correct.
And you argued that, but the appellants know that they've got an open record and they can submit evidence, make argument, change representatives.
Yes, sir.
And they know that how?
They have been, again, this letter is in...
Which letter?
...is in error, the July 15th letter. However, the supplemental statement of the case... did inform him that if you have nothing further to submit, the board will consider what you have already submitted in deciding your appeal. So again, in this case, appellant has affirmatively, and his representative affirmatively stated twice that he had no evidence to submit.
So it's the notice sent under 1938?
Yes, it would be the SSOC and the SSOC notice response. And he waived the full 30 days in this case. And finally, I'd like to, Secretary, I'd like to address appellants.
Yeah, hold on a sec. So here, Mr. Williams, I think, received 41 days of the 90 days. So is there a point at which the Secretary would believe that the amount of time the veteran had to add evidence or whatever was insufficient? Like, if, let's say, 3 days after the end of the 30 days under 19.38, would the Secretary I mean, does the board have to wait for a particular period of time, or is it your view that they don't have to wait for any time at all? Like, immediately upon expiration of the 30 days under 19.38, the board can issue a decision?
That is correct, Your Honor. And that is, yes, because in this situation, Section 19.38 says that the case is returned to the board for further appellate processing. It is ready for a decision.
And so, here, though, I'm trying to remember the chronology here. He received notice of the certification letter. Didn't he also receive notice of the case returning to the board, separate and apart from the 20.1304 notice?
This is in January 2013 with the initial certification, or
no, in this current go-round.
And there was a, did he receive notice that of the return to the board?
And did he receive anything other than the 19.38 30-day notice and the 20.1304 90 days or notice? Did he get any other notice?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
There was a notice sent to him from the regional office. I apologize. I do not believe it is in the record of proceedings. But he did receive a notice from the regional office, although that regional office erroneously states that his case was certified, refers to certification and transfer.
Okay.
And moving to appellant's prejudice argument, appellant refers to errors in the 2004 rating decision. Those assertions of error were not with errors with processing of notification. Those errors were not raised in appellant's reply brief. Appellant is seeking an effective date earlier than May 2009 and is asserting Q in a January 1970 rating decision. In his brief or in his reply brief, he does not raise any specific assertions of error. And under Sanders versus Shinseki, an appellant must tell the court what specific evidence he would have submitted or how it could make a difference in his appeal. And appellant in his reply brief 13 says that if he were able to obtain additional evidence or argument during his 90-day period, he would have submitted this evidence in support of his claim before the board denied the claim. So in his briefing, appellant has not stated that he has any evidence to submit. It is most a hypothetical or speculative assertion of evidence.
But in Clark recently, didn't Mr. Clark say something similar to what Mr. Williams is saying here?
And in that case, the issue was service connection. So he was the court noted in Clark that in his reply brief, the appellant in that case had stated that he was in possession of medical evidence that could substantiate his claim. Here, the board found that May 2009 is the earliest effective date that he can get. And again, appellant raises no assertions of Q or clear error with the January 1970 rating decision in his briefing. So, and under Sanders, the Supreme Court noted that prejudicial error analysis is circumstance specific. In this case, because of the claims that he's seeking, this is the earliest possible effective date that he could obtain. An appellant does not assert, and in a Q analysis, the board is limited to reviewing evidence and argument that was before the board at the time of the rating decision, and appellant has not asserted that he has any evidence prior to that time relevant to the Q analysis.
So what do you want us to hold here?
The Secretary asks that the court hold that 19.38 not Section 20.1304 governs cases that return to the board following a board remand. And in the alternative, should the court find that Section 20.1304 apply in these cases, the secretary asks that the court find that the appellant has failed to show that this regulation is arbitrary or capricious and is constitutional. And if there are no further questions, Your Honor.
I have another one. If 1304, sometimes in statutory interpretation, regulatory interpretation, and can mean or. And if you look at 1304, it says that 1304, the veteran's entitled to 90 days after certification and transfer. Mm-hmm. If we read the and as or, then 1304 would apply under these circumstances because it is transferred multiple times, perhaps, and in this case it was, between the AOJ and the board.
And Your Honor, the Secretary would respond by noting the difference between the terms transfer and return. And no certification is required, no second certification is required in the case, and the court says that in Kine versus Shinseki. So while the board may have filed this process is supposed to be automatic. The case is supposed to automatically return to the board.
So returned, transferred does not mean returned.
The regulations suggest the difference, that there is a difference between the two terms. Again, the term certified and transfer appears in Section 19.35 and Section 19.36 and in Section 20.1304, whereas in Section 19.38, it refers only to a return of a case to the board.
Well, I mean, what's troubling is that, I mean, Part 19 and Part 20 are board rules, right? And they just have been doing it wrong. That's the troubling part here, is that you're basically admitting, like, yeah, that they don't even know how to interpret their own rules, because you're making these fine distinctions about return and, you know, certified transfer, you know, all these words that apparently have very specific meanings, but the board, whether out of an abundance of caution or I don't know what else, it just is not reading these the same way that the secretary is. That's troubling.
Yes, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, the Secretary would like to conclude.
Thank you, Mr. Joseph.
Thank you, and we request that the Court affirm the August 2016 decision. Thank you.
Ms. Gentile, you may proceed with rebuttal.
Thank you. Sorry, just one moment, Your Honor.
Yeah. Dawn.
There are three topics, Your Honors, that we would like to expand upon in this. One is expedition, and waiver is the second one, and then prejudice is the third one. At the outset, though, we'd like to mention the ongoing problem that VA's actions consistently belie its legal defenses. There have been two instances here where that has happened. First, VA's attorneys argue that 1304 doesn't apply here, but VA applied 1304 in its notice letter to Mr. Williams in 2016. Second, VA says that this case wasn't certified in 2016. Mr. Williams received a letter notifying him that this case was certified in 2016. If these arguments are to mean anything, they have to be borne out in VA's behavior, and they have not been. The VA actually made these same arguments last time I was here in oral argument for another case in Williams, that was another Williams case, although different Williams, and that was in January of this year. VA made the same arguments. That was in January of this year. Today's October 23rd. That's That's more than enough time for VA to correct these kinds of errors, and they've been ongoing, and they're still ongoing. This is problematic. It's confusing to veterans, and it's leading to the ongoing issues that we have today. But at any rate, VA has argued that it's in its interest that it expedite cases, that expedition is an important interest. Now, expedition does not mean speed at all costs. The government's interest isn't that it should be able to win cases when they come to the court or when they're at the board, that VA should be able to deny cases with all speed. It's that justice shall be done, that veterans are entitled to receive the benefits that are due to them. That's from Barrett v. Nicholson. Now, the board, in our practice, is not in the habit of making quick grants. It's only in the habit of making quick denials. Since 2014, VetLag has been of record in 98 grants at the board. None of those have been in the 90-day period. All of those grants have been out. It takes a while for the board to grant something. It doesn't seem to take very long for the board to make these denials. As a matter of fact, one-third of the board's denials that we were on record of, there was about 36 of them, I believe, have happened within the 90-day period. So it's not in the board's interest to make expeditious grants. It's only in their interest, apparently, to make expeditious denials within the 90-day period without obtaining all the evidence necessary, or at least without allowing an appellant to exercise some kind of a 90-day right. Now, even while Rule 1304A was being promulgated, the Secretary stated that it's in the board's interest to get all the evidence in front of it before it makes a decision, and that 60 days wasn't a sufficient period of time to do that. Now, somehow 90 days is seen as a sufficient period of time, which we would agree with as long as it's not being cut short by an early board denial. Now, as far as waiver goes, the Secretary has argued that Mr. Williams' representative's 2016 statement, something, I can't remember it off the top of my head, something about I have no further evidence, I rest the appeal, and that was in the SSOC phase. That was an SSOC response. Now, in 2013, Mr. Williams' representative, who was a different person but filled out the same form, made almost the exact same statement, and then his case was certified, and then he submitted additional evidence to the board, and then outside of the 90-day period, the board remanded Mr. Williams' claim based upon that statement. So in no way should Mr. Williams' 2016 statement, which was identical to the 2013 one, be considered some kind of a knowing, voluntary, and intentional waiver. And Clark would agree with that. There's nothing knowing, voluntary, and intentional when it doesn't even mention the 90-day period. It doesn't mention anything about wanting the board to ignore the 90-day period. And at any rate, Mr. Williams was given this notice letter after he said that after he submitted this 2016 statement. So he was anyway provided with a notice letter and given an expectation of some kind of a 90-day right, some kind of a 90-day expectation. Now that moves us to prejudice. Clark spoke at length about prejudice both in its majority opinion and its dissent. And while the Secretary urges us to look at the dissent, the majority opinion would direct us towards the opposite conclusion from what the Secretary urges. Prejudice has to be somewhat speculative, because it is not in the court's business to re-adjudicate every single case to make sure prejudice was real. It's in the board's purview to do that, or the AOJ's purview to do that. While it certainly is within the court's jurisdiction to review facts, that would be a wildly inefficient approach to every single case here. And Moore and McGee both instruct us that, yes, prejudice has some kind of a speculative element to it, and that's okay, because the important aspect here is exactly what was said in Clark, which was that Mr. Clark then may have been able to procure additional evidence material to his claim. This is the same case here. Mr. Williams may have been able to procure additional evidence, make new arguments. That's more important in his case, as this is a case more on the record, more based upon the record and notice requirements. Or, and this would have been most advantageous to him probably, obtain or change representatives. And he was not able to do that. He was prejudiced because he could have been able to do it. He had a reasonable expectation that he could have, and that was cut short. We have the remainder of our time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Gentile. Thank you both very much. The case is submitted for consideration, and the court will now come down and greet counsel.
Aye.